The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Web Studio, Primetime Advertising Corporation, and the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but can the existence of God be proved? Well, that all depends on your definition of proof. We'll be discussing this and other really good questions about God and the Bible. Welcome to our sanctuary, a sanctuary for skeptics and doubters, where people can feel free to call in or write in and be treated with respect. Our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture, those two forbidden dinner table conversations, religion in politics, yes, sir. So much going on in politics lately, it's difficult to keep up with it all on a weekly show. And as you know, these last couple of weeks, I devoted a great deal of time to that whole San Diego atheist billboard controversy. So, if you've been just salivating to get my commentaries, enough with the atheist sign already, Bob. I want your commentaries about the latest news, and you want that on a more regular daily basis, more than a weekly show can provide. I do have a daily blog, bobsiegel.townhall.com. In addition to that, I'm also a regular contributor now for San Diego Newsroom and San Diego Rostra, both internet news magazines, which you can read. And in there, you'll find my columns and editorials a lot more frequently. But wait, there's more, much more. Tell them what else we have. Don Pardo.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, tomorrow night, Bob will be guest hosting the Rick Amato Show.
Yes, indeed, I will. And we'll catch up on a lot of politics in that 2-hour time slot. That's the Rick Amato Show, Monday, December 21st, 9 o'clock to 11 o'clock p.m. here on this same station, KCBQ 1170. Meanwhile, there is a news event from a couple of weeks ago, but I assure you, it's still extremely current. This is President Obama's speech before the West Point cadets. Now, why is this still news? Because people are still trying to figure out exactly what he said. Nobody knows what he said. But that's right. It's time for a reoccurring feature on the Bob Siegel Show, Dancing to the Questions and Answers with Barack Obama.
Question me and answer bright and clear. I will answer with a question clear and bright. Even though your answer may be wrong, my question will be right. Question me and answer. Answer with a question.
1492.
What's the year that Babe Ruth hit his 60th home run?
Wellington and Waterloo.
Who became the hero at the Battle of Bull Run? Learning can be lots of fun. Question me and answer bright and clear.
What? You say you missed President Obama's speech at West Point a couple of weeks ago, even though he broadcasted at the same time he always does, during the dinner hour on the West Coast, during primetime on the East Coast, preempting everyone's favorite TV shows? Well, cheer up. Your old pal Bob's going to carry the day once again by offering some keen, nifty, rad, sweet Cliff Notes, and not just any Cliff Notes, the special Read Between the Lines edition. Here we go. Enjoy President Barack Obama's speech before the West Point cadets. I want to remind everyone about what an important war we have going on in Afghanistan. The Taliban harbored those horrible terrorists who authorized the attack on 9/11. And remember, should this dangerous evil movement overthrow the government of Pakistan right next door, they will acquire a nuclear weapon, and we know people like that would not hesitate to use such a weapon, and this is simply not acceptable. Although I'm not doing much about Iran's nuclear weapon in the hands of a man who denies the Holocaust and threatens to wipe out all Jews. Therefore, because Afghanistan is the good war instead of that mean and nasty and unnecessary war George Bush got us into, I am going to send in 30,000 more troops. 30,000 more troops. In case you didn't hear me, I said 30,000 more troops. But I will only send them in such a way that we make plans now about bringing them home. Hear that, kids? Good news and bad news. You're shipping out. You're coming home. We need a timetable, so our troops will definitely withdraw in 18 months, although that will only begin the withdrawal. We won't complete the exodus without assessing the situation. And don't worry, I won't call it an exodus because that word sounds kind of Jewish and would offend our Muslim friends. Not the ones trying to kill us, all the other Muslims. But whatever we call it, we will leave or not leave. So I guess that really isn't a timetable after all, but it kind of sort of is. To those on the left, remember, we are withdrawing in 18 months. 18 months. Come on, guys. Chill out. So you're against this war. You can hang with me for 18 months, can't you? It's just 18 months for crying out loud. I mean, that's nothing. And for you on the right, don't worry. We are only going to begin to leave in 18 months. In fact, we may not really leave anyway. You see, on one hand, we need to increase our deployment. But on the other hand, we need to decrease our employment. There are always two hands, a left hand and a right hand. And that's why I take care of both of my hands, especially since 18 months brings us just a few months shy of my re-election bid, and I can read the polls at that time and see how people feel about the war before I start debating new challengers. Pretty cool how I figured out that 18-month stuff, huh? And you all thought I just pulled a number out of a hat. Ha! Huh, a lot you know. But anyway, that election is a long way off. Meanwhile, for now, let me tell you how I feel about the war. It's an extremely important cause, because not only are our national interests at stake, the interests of the entire world are at stake. So we absolutely, positively must defeat this enemy, unless we have not defeated them in 18 months, in which case we may or may not stay. But even if we leave, they are not totally our responsibility anyway, despite the fact that they hate us and have sworn to destroy us, even if they have to die in the process and receive 71 virgins to boot. After all, the peaceful Muslim governments of Pakistan and Afghanistan need to take care of the not-so-peaceful Muslims who have hijacked this great world religion founded by a man who taught jihad. You see, instead of paying attention to what Muhammad actually taught, those Taliban and Al-Qaeda dudes are twisting his words and preaching, well, I guess they're preaching what he taught. But remember, Islam is a religion of peace. And so, my fellow Americans, on the one hand, we send more troops. On the other hand, we plan now to have less troops. And folks, just quit fighting about all this. Our country has been far too divisive lately. Well, not everyone, not the Democrats, just those Republicans. If they would simply do everything my way, we could stop all the bipartisanship. Did I mention that I inherited their mess? Yeah, I inherited it from them and their leader, George Bush, the guy I ran against in the last election and the guy I'll run against in the next election. McCain, who's that? Because if my strategy works in Afghanistan, I will take a bow. But if the situation is still problematic, remember, George Bush started this mess, although I agreed with him about the Afghanistan thing, but we are doing poorly in Afghanistan because he brought us into Iraq, and that will still be the reason we have problems over there in 18 months if we happen to have them. Oh yeah, one more thing. Don't forget, America, with all its faults, has done more to help the world financially and militarily than any other nation. We are the best country in the world, even though I recently traveled around the world apologizing for what a bad country we were. But I had to do that. After all, our reputation was bad before I took office because, like I keep telling you, I inherited this mess from George W. Bush. Okay, well, there you have it. That's what Obama truly said a couple of weeks ago. And as Charlie Brown might put it, I won't let all this commercialism ruin my Christmas. Before we return to answer some of those skeptical Bible questions, enjoy the creative music of Mannheim Steamroller.
Up above the northern lights on Christmas night, shimmering above the clouds, dreams take flight. Thank you. your dreams. Take flight.
To build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
Call Bob now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
The sound even more beautiful.
Welcome back to Intelligent Talk 1170 KCBQ. If you'd like to weigh in on any of this, our call-in toll-free number, 1-888-344-1170. That's 1-888-344-1170. We also take your email questions, questions@bobsiegel.net. That's questions@bobsiegel.net. And regarding the atheist Dan who blogged about my reaction to a billboard sign and then turned down my invitation to come on the radio show for debate, Larry in Spring Valley says, good thing he turned you down. You would have had to beep at least one word per sentence from this sewer mouth. Does he really think that such vulgar personal attacks are characteristic of tolerance? That is an interesting point, Larry. Today, the conventional wisdom is that we must be tolerant of everyone except Christians and conservatives. Sandy in El Cajon says, I find it absolutely appalling that he would speak to anyone in that manner. I have to pray for him. What happened to him to make him so hateful? And she writes the so with a lot of O's. So hateful. Well, Sandy David in San Diego is asking the same questions you are. He says, wow, that guy sure got upset fast. I think he has daddy issues. Yeah, he did seem awfully agitated about nothing. Maybe his parents never bought him a sled. That would be the Citizen Kane Orson Welles interpretation, but who knows? Maybe he has no issues at all. Maybe he just had a bad day. We'll go to your phone calls in just a moment. A couple more emails here. Patty in Lakeside writes that Dan is a big-mouthed jerk and afraid to debate. You keep up the good fight. Well, I appreciate the encouraging words, Patty. I don't know Dan well enough to know if he's a jerk. He may be a nice, intelligent person. If so, it was rather hidden last week. Let's just say it was not his finest hour. But I do appreciate your positive admonition to keep up the good fight. And then Mark from El Cajon says, hey, Bob, I was really proud of the way you handled that atheist Dan J. I went to his blog site and I read it from top to bottom. You know, Bob, in my life as a general contractor for the last 30 years or so, I've met a wide range of different people. And because of these life experiences, I've become a very good judge of character. My point is this regarding the atheist who calls himself Dan J. My experience is telling me that after having read all of his diatribe, that he's obviously a very frustrated, egocentric, unhappy with his lot in life, manic, depressed, and spoiled person who takes for granted all that this country stands for and has to offer. Well, I don't know if he's all of those things, Mark, but Mark makes another point that is very interesting. Mark continues, he says, unfortunately, he and his ilk fail to realize that God-fearing Protestant Christians and Catholics and Jews, etc., here in the Western Hemisphere, in future years, may be the only thing left in the world to oppose and keep sane our society in the fight against Islamofascism. There are a lot more Christians than atheists in this country, so it will be Christians who will be fighting and dying to preserve our way of life, especially for guys like Dan Jay. His freedom of speech and freedom of religion, or in his case, freedom of no religion, would be snuffed out in a heartbeat if the Islamofascists ever gained control of this country. Dan Jay would probably say that could never happen here in America. Well, it's too bad we can't ask the 6 million or so dead Jews who died in Hitler's gas chambers if they thought before Hitler came to power, if they could ever be rounded up and then sent to their deaths for just being a mere Jew. I'm sure most, if not all of us, would have said no. That could never happen to us. Sincerely, Mark. Good points, as always, Mark. And Cameron, let's go ahead and go to the phones. And we have our friend Stephen from North Park. Stephen, welcome to the Bob Siegel Show.
Well, hello, Bob.
How
Thank
are you?
Thank you for putting me on the air.
It's always good to hear from you. It's been far too long, but we always love hearing what you have to say.
Well, you know, you're struggling against the atheist again, and what you've got here is you're trying to stop the guy who's trying to undermine the wall. And that's always a noble effort, but unfortunately you have to dig down into the same tunnels that he's digging and countermine them. And that's a tough one, brother. That is a tough one.
Yeah.
Because what you're dealing with is basically underground warfare. You don't have a whole lot of room to move, and you're stuck in that guy's environment. So I commend you for taking this guy on. But I wanted to call on something far more trivial. It was your music.
Hold on for 1 second, though, because I think I'm hearing our bumper music. And oh, we're not. Do you have your radio on behind you, Steve?
Yeah, I've got it.
Okay.
Hold on.
It's fine. It's just I thought Cameron was playing my bumper music, and I'm going, I'm not sure I recognize that. But if you could.
No. I was sitting there listening, and I'm thinking, magic fills the air, spirits everywhere. It's Christmas night. Dreams take flight. And I thought, how kind of Bob to put on bumper music Christmas songs written by Wiccans. I thought that was absolutely the most wonderful display of diversity.
Let me put it this way. If that song was written by a Wiccan, I'm not aware of it.
It sounded like
well,
it.
Well, possibly.
Oh, you could hear the crystals clanging against each other as they danced in the breeze.
Well, have you heard what I've done this last month is I played a different Christian song each week, and I think up to now, well, with the exception of maybe last week, they usually do sing about Christ, but I love Mannheim Steamroller. That's from one of their latest albums.
I
believe they were singing about Santa Claus, and no, I don't believe in Santa Claus, but, you know, I don't have the big problem some Christians have with Santa Claus in as much as there was a real Saint Nicholas.
Okay.
There was... But I think the magic in the air meant the reindeer and stuff. But let me put it this way: if I ever find out that song was written by a Wiccan, I will never play it again.
It sounded like it. I'm just goofing on you a little.
Oh well, I know you are. I know you well enough to know you wouldn't get bent out of shape over something like that. However, since you did bring it up, I have a tendency, and I'll admit this freely: when I like the music in a song, I don't always pay that much attention to the lyrics. I listened to it. I thought, oh yeah, he's singing about Santa Claus, but so what? But you know what? If that was Wiccan thrown in, you'll never hear that.
Oh brother, it sounded so floaty and drifty. I was about ready to light up the incense and rub myself down with patchouli oil.
Did
man.
It bring a tear to your eye, Stephen? Did it bring a little tear to your eye hearing that beautiful music?
Okay. Well, I thought I'd just bring that up.
Hey, yeah. While I have you, what was your take on Obama's speech? Did you hear our little take on Obama's speech today?
One?
The speech that he gave to the cadets, where people are trying to figure out exactly what he said. What's your take?
You know something, brother. We put our foot in it this time with this guy, and I'm afraid to say that people were carried away by their hopes for who this guy was, rather than any solid appraisal of what the guy's done and the guy's capabilities.
And it was all there. His past record was abundantly clear. People just didn't want to look at it.
It was abundantly clear to those who wanted to see it.
That's right.
But to the people who were thinking, okay, for once and for all, we're going to put the specter of the 1960s behind us and the fire hoses and the police dogs and all that stuff is going to go away, and we're going to learn to love each other. Look, we've accepted a black guy as the president of the United States. All our sins are atoned for. Well, they definitely put their foot in it, and this guy has proven to be, I guess you would call him just a darker shade of Jimmy Carter.
Yeah, no pun intended, of course. I can think of many, many African Americans
who would have made wonderful presidents.
It's just not this guy.
Look, Shelby Steele, I would have voted for him like in a heartbeat. But this guy has proven to be more totalitarian in nature.
Oh, Clarence Thomas, Walter Williams, Thomas Sowell. There's people that would have done a wonderful job.
Exactly. Tom Sowell, yeah, definitely. But this guy has proven to be... I'm afraid to say a crypto-totalitarian. There is totalitarian elements there. It was nicely disguised and beautifully camouflaged, but it's there. When he commands the EPA to take over the regulation of the carbon through a system of command and control, at that point, he's completely left the Constitution behind, and indeed the spirit by which Americans are self-governing people.
Oh, well, he's gone on record as saying that he doesn't like the Constitution. He didn't use the words "I don't like," but he said the Constitution tells us about
negative
things, and then he says it's judges who bring about the positive thing. It's pretty scary. There is one problem. I've kind of enjoyed talking about Jimmy Carter as the worst president we ever have. I just don't know how
Not
much
anymore.
Longer I'm going to be able to say that. Yeah.
I never thought that I would find, when Bill Clinton came along, we had a man who made Richard Nixon look honorable. And when Barack Obama came along, we had a man who made Jimmy Carter no longer the worst president we've ever elected.
But I'll say this, Stephen, for Barack Obama, a lot of the things he's doing, he said he was going to do. He said he was going to redistribute the wealth. He said he was going to destroy the country.
Yeah.
I'm not one of those guys that worried he would not keep his campaign promises. I was worried that he would keep them.
Yes, we feared that he would do that.
Yeah, I'd be delighted if he broke every one of his campaign promises. Well, Stephen, my friend,
it is always good
to hear from you. And have a Merry Christmas. And I'm even willing to say Happy Holiday if we remember that holiday means Holy Day. And we remember
Holy Day to you, too,
the Holy
brother.
Day. Holy Day is Christmas.
And no more wicked Christmas music, please.
I'll have to look into that. I still think it was Santa Claus, but you never know. Stranger things have happened.
Okay, thanks.
Take care, Stephen. Bye-bye. We'll be right back with the Bob Siegel Show. This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539, W&S Electric.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Welcome back to our program. I wanted to let you know next week I will be out of town. That's probably not a big surprise. It's common for people to take time off at Christmas. I will be going up to Hume Lake Christian Camp where my brother and my daughter-in-law live and work. I'll have kind of a white Christmas. The Bob Siegel Show will be on next week. Of course, it'll be a repeat broadcast, and we don't just pull one off the shelf. I select them. It is our annual Christmas special. We did it for the first time 2 years ago with a guest host, our guest co-host, Lori Lewis, and Sylvia Lane, who's a phenomenal singer and excellent Christian lady in terms of the things she teaches and the stands that she takes and the courage she exhibits. But her interesting little claim to fame, actually, is that she is the niece of Hugh Martin. Now, that name may not be familiar to a lot of you, but he wrote the musical Meet Me in St. Louis, which includes the song Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. And she comes on the show and explains how he was led to Christ in a hospital room, how he changed the lyrics of that song to sing more about Jesus. She sings the new version. She sings many other songs. We'll hear Lori sing. So we had it 2 years ago for the first time. The show was so well received, we repeated it again last year. And we're going to repeat it this year. Now, don't get too confused because December the 25th will come on a Friday. So you'll actually hear this show on December the 27th. And I'm hoping nobody turns the radio on and goes, what the heck's going on with Siegel? Christmas is over. I think you know by now, being that I play Christmas music from November to January. To me, it's not just the day. It's the season. It's only going to be 2 days after Christmas, for crying out loud. You're not one of those people that takes your tree down the day after Christmas, are you? It absolutely amazes me. First day in November, all the decorations go up in the stores. The day after Christmas, they come down. Walk into a Hallmark store a day or two after Christmas. They've already got their Valentine's Day display up. Yeah, that's what I want to do after emptying my pocket on Christmas gifts. I'm going to start thinking about Valentine's Day 2 months earlier. Anyway, it'll only be the 27th, but it could get a little confusing because it's, and here's where you have to pay careful attention. It will be a repeat from a show that did play before Christmas. So you'll hear Lori ask me what I'm doing for Christmas, but I think you'll be able to figure it all out. So that's next week, our special annual repeat, but not just any repeat of a Christmas show. Well, last week I read and answered one of several questions from Alex, who writes us all the way from the United Kingdom. And I promised that I would finish his questions this week. And you know I can be trusted, right? Isn't this a face you can trust? Stare into your radio right now and tell me, is this a face you can trust? Now, Alex does not identify himself as an atheist, but as one who has recently been bombarded with a lot of questions from atheists, and he's passing the questions on to me. And here's his first question. Well, we read his first one last week. I guess it's really his second question. Can God do anything? And if he can he make a rock so heavy that he cannot lift it? As a matter of fact, this is not an original question. The question may be as old as God himself. Still, some people think that when they pose the question, you, if you're a Christian or any kind of theist, are going to just fall out of your chair because you've never heard it before. They believe they're quite clever just for asking it. Now, I don't mean to generalize all skeptics, because certainly there are others who are being very sincere when they pose it just as a question of logic. And I absolutely know that Alex is asking with sincerity, and I respect that. My answer is going to surprise everybody, Christian and non-Christian alike. You ready? No, God cannot do anything. There, I said it. Christians may be as startled as anyone by this response. It's true that the Bible rejoices in God's marvelous abilities, which are so far beyond ours, that the ancient Hebrews in their hyperbole often spoke of God's omnipotence. However, and it's an important however, When the Bible tells us that God can do anything, it means God can do anything that's possible to do. That even includes miracles. Miracles may be beyond our limited understanding, but God knows things about science that we have not yet attained. So yes, God does miracles because it is possible for God to do miracles, but some things are impossible even for God. Don't forget, this very same Bible goes out of its way to teach that God can never be tempted by evil. He can never be evil. He can never be tempted by evil. James 1:13. Now, doesn't this make sense? Can God be 100% good and 100% evil at the same time? No, of course he can't. That a good God cannot be an evil God is rather obvious. If we wanted to enter this discussion with moral neutrality, however, such a phenomenon could never exist according to logic either. How can any being, be 100% of one thing and 100% of something else at the same time? It's like saying the color of blood is 100% red and 100% green, paying homage to Vulcans. The same holds true for the rock illustration. It posits a God who can do anything and then in his omnipotence arranges matters so that he cannot do anything. Well, the great Christian philosopher and writer C.S. Lewis, I think, gave the best answer I've ever heard for this kind of question. He said, "Nonsense is nonsense, even when we are talking about God." Moving on to Alex's next question. In the Bible, why did God kill many people in order for him to gain respect? Then he puts in parentheses, cannot remember where it is in the Bible, but it happened. Well, Alex, God killed people only because of their sin. His concern about respect is not regarding the respect as an end in itself. You could argue that God doesn't absolutely need our respect. But God knows that apart from a relationship with him, made possible by his Spirit changing our hearts and his forgiveness made possible by Jesus on the cross, we simply cannot, we are incapable of living the kinds of lives that our own consciences tell us to live. And Romans chapter 2 talks a lot about the conscience. Alex's next question, what kind of loving God would send somebody to hell for all eternity just for not believing in him? Alex, that is an excellent question, and it's one I hear a lot. What kind of loving God would send somebody to hell? Is God going to send you to hell just for not believing in him, just for not believing in Jesus? Well, hold right there, because I'm going to answer you when we get back to the Bob Siegel Show.
How many times have you heard the phrase, "they're all the same," applied to local contractors? It is unfortunate that a few can tarnish the reputations of many, but it sure is nice when you find a contractor with godly principles. But what if they only do floors or only the painting? What if you want to build a whole new home, or you want someone to fully complete your remodel or tenant improvements? You need ProBuilt. Serving San Diego since 1987, residential and commercial, quality work completed on time. Local Christian businessman and president of ProBuilt, Jim Bell, said, "When people pay you to do a job, they simply want you to do the job. They expect quality work, and they expect it to be done on time. We do that at ProBuilt." For references and dozens of pictures of both residential and commercial work, visit our website, ProBuiltInc.com. That's ProBuiltInc.com. Or call our El Cajon office at 619-593-2965. We're fully bonded and insured. California State License Number 567925. ProBuilt.
I'd like to remind all of my listeners that The Bob Siegel Show has a sister program on our sister station, KPRZ 1210 on the dial. Every Sunday morning from 9 o'clock to 9:30, you can hear City Voice. On this provocative program, my good friend George Runyon interviews a different local Christian ministry every week. You can listen to the show while driving to church, and don't be surprised, you may find it so interesting that you'll stay in the parking lot continuing to listen and skipping those Sunday school donuts. That's City Voice with George Runyon every Sunday morning from 9 o'clock to 9:30 on our sister station, KPRZ 1210. But right now, you're listening to KCBQ 1170. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. I'm reading questions from Alex. Alex doesn't state whether he's a believer or not, but he went out of his way to say that he himself is not an atheist, but atheists are bombarding him with questions. We're going through them, and then if we have some time after Alex, I have another person named Thomas who is an atheist, writing us all the way from Ireland. We got both Ireland and United Kingdom. Of course, depending on what part of Ireland, part of Ireland is the United Kingdom, part of it isn't. Won't get into the whole history of England and Ireland right now, though. Alex asked the question, what kind of loving God would send somebody to hell for all eternity just for not believing? Alex, the belief is not what's important. The turning from sin is what's important to God. I do not believe that God will condemn any sincere ignorance. In fact, there's even a verse found in Acts 17 when Paul was talking to the philosophers on Mars Hill. And he said, the times of ignorance God has overlooked. Now, one is condemned when they know or strongly suspect that Jesus is real because the Holy Spirit is making that clear to them, enlightening them, melting their hearts, but then they still have enough free will and they abort this process for the reason that they would rather live a life of sin. That's the person who gets condemned, not the person who just happens to believe. I know you hear that in the scripture, you read that, those who believe will be saved. But the word believe in ancient Greek doesn't translate exactly the way it does today. That word is pisteo, and it meant to trust, to cling to rely upon, to obey. So one is saved by making a decision to obey Jesus. Merely believing in him doesn't do it. In fact, James tells us that. He says the demons believe in Jesus, and they shudder. One must make a decision to obey Jesus. We can't do that on our own, though. We can only receive God's forgiveness and the supernatural power of his Holy Spirit. And when we admit that we cannot obey him on our own, God puts us into a relationship with him. But it's the decision to enter into a process that we know through God's grace and mercy will result in obedience. So you're asking a very good question, Alex. Your friends who are passing them on are asking you good questions. Now, as for the second part, why would a loving God send people to hell? You know, it's interesting because when we ask if a loving God would send people to heaven, everybody says, well, of course. Even those that don't believe in heaven, they wouldn't have a problem conceptually with the idea of a loving God sending people to heaven. What is heaven? It's paradise, where there's no evil, there's no crime, there's no death. Now, question, how will it remain paradise if God also allows evil people there? You see, our earthly court systems reveal how we honestly feel about a heavenly court system. After all, if a human judge were to let a murderer go free or a rapist go free, and actually they do it all the time, and we know how people react, they react and they view them as reckless, irresponsible judges. In fact, would he not also be considered an unloving judge to put so many innocent people at risk with his careless decision? Likewise, on that same note, what kind of judge would God be if he didn't hold people accountable for the way they lived their lives? And again, what kind of community would heaven be if God permitted evil people to be there? If sin were not removed from paradise, it's not going to be paradise much longer. We must think of hell as a prison which separates out wicked people, preventing them from doing harm to others, and separates them out exactly for that reason. When viewed this way, I submit to you that hell paints the picture of a just and therefore loving God. Imagine a man like Hitler, who after the extermination of millions of innocent people, not just Jews, millions and millions of others, took a few capsules and died a quick death so that the Allied armies on their way to Berlin could never drag him out of his bunker, take him to a courtroom, and give him justice. Isn't there some measure of consolation in the belief that Hitler didn't get to check out that easily? Doesn't it make you feel better to know that he'll actually stand accountable before God for what he did? Doesn't it feel good to know that evil people will not really get away with anything and that good will ultimately prevail? Now, there is this one other little matter. Since we are all guilty of sin, you may not be as bad as a Hitler, but we all have some evil in us. Some, the Bible calls that sin, we need the forgiveness of Jesus. And therefore, we all need to go through that cleansing process of forgiveness and redemption before any of us could enter heaven, or heaven is not heaven. See how it works? Alex's next question, why doesn't God send somebody down to tell other religions to believe in him instead of killing them for all eternity? Actually, originally, God came down. God did what I always hear people do. They say, why doesn't God just come down from heaven in his true glory and his true appearance and end all this? He did. He came down to Mount Sinai himself, and it freaked the people out. They flipped out. They asked Moses to go up and come back with a report of what God had said. When Moses returned, they doubted him. Now, Moses, upon his verge of death, kind of giving his final farewell State of the Union message, reminded the Israelites that they had chosen human spokesmen and that this was how God would continue to speak. He's saying, this was your idea, so you better honor God when he goes through with your idea. Still, ultimately, years later, God became a man himself and came down again. He continues to send people today. Remember Jesus' parable of the rich man and Lazarus? Abraham tells the rich man that if his evil brothers do not accept the Bible, well, then neither would they believe if a man was raised from the dead. That's Luke 16. After this parable, Jesus was raised from the dead. You see, people tend to believe what they want to believe. Alex's next question. It says that if the Pope changes a rule, then the same thing happens in heaven, and whatever he changes is then what God wants. So if he said that killing all children is okay, does that mean we should start killing all children? Let me answer this as carefully as I can, Alex. I am not a Catholic. The Bible does not teach anywhere that we are supposed to even have a pope. Your criticism of the pope is valid if we want to presuppose the validity of Catholicism and also presuppose some distorted views even of Catholicism. However, with all due respect to Catholics, this is not a problem to the Bible or the teachings of Jesus. Now, to defend the Catholics just a little, they don't teach that the Pope commands God. They teach that God commands the Pope. But again, I don't think we even need to have a Pope because nowhere in the Bible does it say that we need one. Alex's next question. The Bible says the world is 6,000 years old. How is that possible? Because we have found fossils older than that. Well, there are disputes about how old the fossils are, but I won't even go there. Let me tell y'all where that figure comes from. Here's where Alex got that figure. If we add Adam's age when he died and then add it up to all the rest of the genealogies of the Bible, all the way up to the time of Christ, they come up with this figure of some 6,000 years. Well, first of all, I don't believe they're counting Adam's age from the day Adam was created. When Adam was living in the Garden of Eden, he was living in eternity. That was really heaven on earth. He was meant to be immortal. He was meant to live forever. He may have lived in that garden for millions of years. They may have populated the world at that time. God told them to be fruitful and populate the world. When Adam and Eve had Cain and Abel years later, this was the mortal Adam and Eve, the Adam and Eve that fell into sin. And remember, Cain was afraid that he'd run into people, and he asked God to protect them. And God didn't deny that there were other people out there. Well, where did those other people come from? Probably from the fact that it was a whole community that fell into sin, not just Adam and Eve. So if they're counting from the time Adam was mortal and they give him some 900 some years, that doesn't mean that Adam only lived 900 years. He could have lived 1,000 years, 1,000,000 years before that. Now, I do not believe, having said that, that the Bible even gives us the age of the world, because that's another way people add it in. They go back and then before Adam, they say, well, then he was only around 6 days before he started counting to 900. I do not believe the Bible gives us the age of the world. Now, don't get me wrong. I have no problem believing that an all-powerful God could have created the world in 6 literal days. He could have also done it in 6 minutes. He could have done it in 6 seconds. Did he do that? I don't think we're forced to that conclusion, and I'll tell you why I don't think we're forced to that conclusion when we return. This is Bob Siegel inviting you to tune in for the Rick Amato Show 4 nights a week here on 1170 KCBQ. Rick stays on top of the issues local and national. He also does some of the most stimulating interviews you've ever heard. That's the Rick Amato Show Monday through Thursdays from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. here on Intelligent Talk 1170 KCBQ. You can also find Rick on AmatoTalk.com.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
We're going through some questions from Alex, writing us from the United Kingdom. Questions that his atheist friends have been asking him. And one of them has to do with this idea that the world is 6,000 years old. And that presupposes that Adam was counted from the day he was created in the garden rather than being counted from the day he turned mortal. without knowing how many days he was in that garden, or years, or millions of years. But that question also is predicated on the fact that people are assuming a literal six-day creation. And before we went to the break, I said I have no problem believing God was capable of creating the world in 6 days. But having said that, I don't think we're forced to that conclusion. Now, although I myself do not believe in the theory of evolution, it should still be pointed out that Genesis was not written as a science book, but rather as a history of the people of Israel. That's an important thing to keep in mind. Only the first three chapters even talk about the creation of the world and the fall of human beings into sin. This tells us something right there about the priority of the writer. He was obviously giving a quick review of an oral tradition already known to the people. Only when Abraham comes on the scene in chapter 12 does the narrative slow down and begin to give intricate detail. So I have to conclude from that specifics about creation were not the writer's intention. The first chapter of Genesis is written in a style of writing known as Hebrew poetry, not the second chapter. Second chapter is a historical narrative, but chapter one is written in Hebrew poetry. It's not seeking to give any kind of order to creation, as evidenced by the fact that in that poem, the world exists with water and vegetation prior to the creation of the sun. Now, the word for day in Hebrew, yom, that's a word that did not necessarily mean a literal 24-hour day, but could also be referring to an event. You can go to Old Testament prophets like Joel to see it used that way, an event. This poem, then, could simply be God's way of discussing different events in the stages of creation. You see, the Bible portrays God as being completely removed from time. 2 Peter 3:8, Revelation 13:8 would be two verses I would point to. God is completely removed from time. Time is a human limitation. When we ask whether it took God 6 days or 6 million years to create the world, the question is irrelevant. In fact, it took God no amount of time at all to create the world because God does not exist in time. To speak at our level, God could just be using language we will relate to. Since we live in time and space, it is possible that a very long process over the years, as we understand years, created the world and slowly brought about different forms of life. Alex's next question, who says the Bible is real? Anybody could have written it, and it could have been made to be fake. If a nuclear war was to kill all of us tomorrow, except for a group of people on an island, then those people found the books of the Lord of the Rings, then that could seem real to them. The exact same thing might have happened with the Bible. Well, the exact same thing might have happened hypothetically with the Bible, but it actually didn't happen that way with the Bible. Now, I love J.R. Tolkien and the Lord of the Rings, but Tolkien freely admits that the Lord of the Rings is fiction. The authors of the Bible make no such claim. They claim it is true. And the civilizations which brought us the Bible, which would be the configuration and integration of ancient Greece, ancient Rome, and ancient Israel, those civilizations did not suddenly cease to exist through a nuclear holocaust. They didn't suddenly cease to exist through any kind of war. It's true that they gradually morphed into a newer Italy and a newer Israel and a newer Greece. They changed, but there was a continuum. It's not like some country that got destroyed and then we went and discovered it. The Bible is backed up through the testimony of history and archaeology, Alex. The parting of the Red Sea, where that took place, has been authenticated. We even found an Egyptian chariot wheel at the bottom of this place. The walls of Jericho falling in an unusual manner were authenticated by the team of John Garsting, archaeologist. The existence of Joseph in Egypt was authenticated just recently. King David, Pontius Pilate, King Herod, all testified to by archaeology. And then let's not forget prophecy. Isaiah 53 predicts that the Messiah will die for the sins of the world and rise from the dead. But Isaiah wrote that 700 years before Jesus came. And in Daniel 9, they give a calendar of the actual day that the Jews will return to their land. They also predict that the head of Persia will allow the Jews to go back to their land and release the slaves, something unprecedented. People didn't, out of the goodness of their heart, just release slaves. But these were all predicted. Finally, and this is where the rubber really meets the road, the Holy Spirit will also provide a personal witness. In short, one can know that the God of the Bible exists because one can meet the God of the Bible. I understand how that sounds, but that's just exactly what the Bible promises. Alex's last question. The New Testament was written hundreds of years after Jesus died. Most Bibles end with an empty tomb. Is it possible that people could have just thought that the empty tomb ending was bad and added more into the Bible? Well, we're really dealing with two different issues here. First of all, the New Testament was not written hundreds of years. I think what you may have meant to say, Alex, is that our earliest copy of New Testament manuscripts, some are a couple hundred years later, some are within 30 years of the time they were written. But that's true of all ancient history. All ancient history comes to us as copies. We don't have the original manuscripts of anything because in those days you couldn't save it on your hard drive. And papyri didn't last that long. But when was the New Testament completed? It was completed around 90 AD. Jesus was executed in 33 AD. We're talking about a span of only 60 years. Now, if you mean the manuscript copies, well, then it's not true with them either because the manuscript copies do end with the resurrection of Jesus in all four of the Gospels. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Oh, sure. At times, in addition to a complete manuscript, somebody might find a fragment, and the fragment might be incomplete, but we do have the complete ones. Good questions, Alex. I hope this helps, and feel free to write us again at any time. Now, this is from Thomas in Ireland. I've got a lot with him. I'm obviously not going to get to all of it this week, so I will continue it, but not next week, 2 weeks from now. As I told you, next week I'll be out of town and we're running our repeat Christmas show. But let me at least start the dialogue with Thomas and then I will get to the remainder of it 2 weeks from now when we continue to do our live show. Thomas says, Mr. Siegel, let me introduce myself. My name is Thomas Ryan and I'm an atheist living in Ireland. I happened on your website and read your proof of God. I had a few comments and would like to address them here. If you do not think that too forward of me, please see my comments below. And Thomas knows we've communicated that I was going to read this over the air. He doesn't mind. He doesn't mind me reading his last name. Anyway, Thomas, I am happy to address your questions. By the way, I'm envious that you live in Ireland. I have always wanted to go there, and I go to Irish pubs with my friends and listen to Irish music all the time. But I suppose that's beside the point. Then what happens is he quotes me in an article that I wrote actually for townhall.com. It's linked to my website. Is there proof for the existence of God? Now, I'm not going to just read the whole article. It is a brief article. You can go there and read it. You can find that on Town Hall. Is there proof for the existence of God? But what happens is, as this dialogue goes, Thomas will start by quoting me from the article. Then he responds to the article. And then you're going to hear me respond to Thomas. So we'll actually get through the whole article. My article begins, and he quotes me saying, in my book, I'd Like to Believe in Jesus, I make the point that God's existence cannot be proven or disproved. Thomas immediately says, I agree. Proof is a mathematical and logical construct and has no real-world inference. Unfortunately, the use of the word has entered the lexicon and is widely used, so much so that when I use it, I always present my understanding of its meaning. I define proof as a logical conclusion arrived at when undeniable, demonstrable, justifiable evidence for a claim is presented to such validity that all possible claims to the contrary are rendered void. Okay, so let me respond to that. Thomas, according to that definition, I define proof differently, but in a manner very similar to yours. And I contrast it with the word evidence. We will continue this dialogue that we only began 2 weeks from now. I will see you 2 weeks from now, but join us for our repeat Christmas broadcast and have a Merry Christmas. We don't mind saying that here. We don't believe anybody's civil liberties are violated by saying Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas. Oh, and Happy New Year.
Thank you for listening to The Bob Siegel Show. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. The Bob Siegel Show was brought to you in part by the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton, helping infertile families have children. Tom Pinkerton would like to invite you to help Bob expand his radio program by donations or sponsorship. For more information about Bob's ministry, go to www.bobsiegel.net. Here, you can read Bob's articles and get information about Bob's books. That's Bob Siegel, SIEGEL.net.